Okay, well, it was a small audience last session. I can see there's lots of new people. So I'm actually speaking about the same project, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about a health promotion research project that was funded by the National Institutes for Minority Health and Health Disparities through Stimulus. And my name is Deborah Parmedina. I'm at the University of Texas Health Science Center, and I'm the principal investigator. I work at the Institute for Health Promotion Research. We develop interventions to promote health, primarily focused on lifestyle behavior interventions. And for this research, I partnered with the University of Texas, San Antonio, and the Department of Engineering with Dr. David Akopian. He worked with Nokia for over 15 years, and his expertise is developing mobile phone apps. And so I went to him saying, I want to develop an intervention that's going to focus on urban adolescent girls to promote physical activity, and I want to incorporate some new technology. Will you help me? And he was willing to partner. I have no disclosures. So basically the outline is why we chose SMS versus other possibilities. Message Space is the software that Dr. Akopian developed for use in our project. We'll talk a little bit about, because this is a research project, how we address security concerns and privacy protections. And I'll tell you a little bit about how that's implemented in the project. Now, the caveat is that this abstract was originally submitted by Dr. Akopian, who couldn't be here today, who's an engineer, and so I am not an engineer. So I will try to share and explain as best I can. So we use mobile communications for health services and information. That's known as mHealth, and we can use mobile phones or PDAs. And we're seeing a growth in this area, particularly in developing countries where we're trying to reach remote and rural areas. And we see it being used for education and awareness, remote monitoring of health conditions, data collection, and also for education and training, bringing information out to people. The mobile phone market is always changing. It's very dynamic. What we see is that there's a variety of vendors, and there's new ones always being introduced into the market. And we also, if we look at smartphones, we also see that there is a variety of options available. And one of the challenges within mobile health is that the technologies aren't standardized across the different phones, and applications aren't portable across different phones. So what do you do? Well, we wanted to do something that was low cost and simple. Our target was teenagers. So they typically have phones, but they tend not to be the smartphones. They don't. If you use SMS, you're not required to have a data plan, which also makes it more accessible. So we decided to use SMS rather than even MMS or develop an app. So the Physical Activity Partnership for Girls is a community-based participatory research project to promote physical activity with middle school-age girls living in urban sectors of San Antonio. And we went through a year-and-a-half process of conducting formative assessments with the community. We did focus groups with parents. We did participatory photo mapping with girls. We conducted a media survey of the girls and a community stakeholder survey to inform the development of this program to promote physical activity. The outcome is BFF, Be Fit with Friends. And this is a behavior modification program. It has a curriculum. It's 9 sessions that's delivered through Girl Scouts of Southwest Texas that provides opportunities for girls to be active. We incorporate an active gaming component so the girls can do We Fit, Connect, that sort of thing. But we also wanted to connect families with local resources. And one of the ways we were doing that is through SMS and sending text messages to parents and children, informing them about events and resources. So David developed Message Space, which is a research tool. It's a messaging system that can be reconfigured depending on each project's needs, and it can collect data and track participant information prospectively. It allows us to create groupings of individuals, so I can send messages to intervention or control participants, boys or girls, parents or children. I can send broadcast messages, the same message to everybody at the same time, or I can send polling messages, American Idol, vote, and I can send feedback. I'm allowed to send messages immediately, or I can schedule them for the future. I can add new attribute management characteristics, meaning I can add new characteristics for participants and change them. Also, I can track the messaging history for every participant. Initially, in the first iteration, it was implemented on one computer in his lab, and now it's actually available through a web-based portal. I think portal is the right word, interface. So Message Space is accessible now through the web, and it's scalable to different sorts of messaging capabilities depending on the project needs. You can use a modem or some sort of system subscription. And we have advanced features, including now participants can register themselves through the web. We have a statistical tool, so you can do quick queries of our responses to polls. We can run multiple projects. So I actually have two current projects that are using this software. And we also are constantly adding new privacy and security features. So here's just a sample. When you log in, you see the Message Space screen page, and here's a screenshot of the a participant individual account and all the information you can track. So here's a graphic of the web-based messaging as kind of the communication system. As you can see, there's managers, which would be my project coordinator, who logs in through the web, and depending on their specific role, if they're a participant, a manager, or an administrator, they have certain privileges to access the database or manipulate the database. The messaging service is consistently looking and checking the database for messages that need to go out, as well as checking for incoming messages. So, for example, when participants send back a response to a poll, it brings that message in and adds it to the database. So this is the database design. We have a participant profile that includes a participant ID, which is the primary key, as well as their phone number, and it stores all the participant information. The first time we did it, we did a baseline survey of the kids, and we basically imported our baseline survey and created the participant database, and then everything else was linked through there. We have a database of messages, and that is a database of all the messages that are sent and received. Also, a database of system users. That table holds all the login information for all the users. We have a poll history database that holds all the questions and responses we received, a holding place for all scheduled messages, as well as a repository of all the broadcast messages. Basically, what happens is the user, the participant, the manager, the administrator, accesses the types in the website into the URL and request to get access. And then basically they checks through the web server to the database to make sure what kind of protections that person has or what kind of access, and then it deploys the appropriate access to the participant. So this is a research project, and of course we wanted to make sure we had the appropriate privacy and security requirements to protect the information that's obtained by participants. So we have things like their physical activity, their phone number, their income, their education levels, a variety of data. And to comply with regulations from IRB as well as HIPAA, and we also need to prevent any unauthorized access to our data system, maintain the data accuracy, and make sure that we're using the correct information as well. So basically, the primary elements that we're using that apply within HIPAA right now are names, telephone numbers, and IP addresses or numbers. And the UT Health Science Center is a covered entity within UTESCA. And I have contracted with UTSA's engineering lab, so they're my business associate. And so as a business associate, they're required to also comply with the privacy and security rules. So the HIPAA security rule basically requires three types of safeguards, which is administrative safeguards, physical safeguards, and technical safeguards. Administrative safeguards are those policies and procedures that are put in place that are designed to protect health information. As physical safeguards are those things that relate to the physical environment that protect the information system from related to the buildings and the equipment and protect it from natural and environmental hazards. And also technical safeguards, and this is those policies and procedures that are put in place that actually protect the electronic information. So basically, what we've done is kind of gone through and looked at the administrative safeguards required by HIPAA, and then how you would implement those in this type of project. So the first one, administrative, these are typical things that we do in university settings when you are covered under an IRB, where you have to look at, we do background checks on everybody that's employed, everybody's included in a data system, they have an ID, they're given a specific username and password, they're given specific training requirements, et cetera. So these are the administrative policies and procedures. In terms of physical safety, David Akopian's lab is at UTSA, and he has certain sorts of controls related to his laboratory in terms of facility access. Everybody has to have a scan card to get in. Everybody has to have a specific username to log into a workstation. There's certain types of security and backups to protect the information and the environment. And in terms of technical safeguards, basically we focus, he's relied a lot on MS SQL 2008 and a lot of the features that they have to protect the data and the information. One of the things in terms of the security rule is access control. So we basically are using role-based access, and also for audit controls, we also have a way of generating logs so that every time something changes in the database, something's added, deleted, we can generate reports and track that information as well. And then, of course, security of transmissions through encryption is also an important solution. So a lot of the administrative and physical safeguards are policies and procedures that are related to the university environment, and the technical safeguards are primarily managed through MS SQL Server technical safeguards, as well as role-based access controls and encoded participant IDs and filters. So in this table, it maps basically the different technical safeguards and the features in MS SQL Server 2008 that were used to meet that safeguard. I'll just kind of go through these quickly for, I don't know if many people are actually using these on a day-to-day. I don't. I depend on David to do this. But the primary ones would be the access control standard, the authentication and authorization things that we have in the SQL Server, as well as, let's see, the encryption is something that we added recently so that we have encryption of all the telephone numbers within the column, and it's done also on the reports as well as within the database, which is also important. So basically, with the role-based access, we have the roles to define and the permissions. And we basically are defining those as we develop the project. So initially, we only had the project manager. Now that we have participants that can go in directly and register themselves, add data, and change data, we've had to add additional roles. So these can be changed during the project as well, so they're flexible. This kind of just shows a little bit about the different kinds of roles and how you can select the types of access that you want. So it's very simple for a project manager to kind of go in and decide, oh, this type of person can have access to these elements. So we can define that very simply. So basically, a message space is a new tool that we use so that we can facilitate sending messages to participants. We built in a variety of privacy tools so that people who want to use it for research can ensure that the data is being protected and monitored appropriately. One of the things that has been facilitated, as opposed to maybe using something that's on the market, is working with an academic engineering researcher. Some of these controls are already in place based on the standards of the institution. So that's one advantage of working with an academic engineer. And basically, the primary technical safeguards are going to be encoded participant IDs and phone numbers, and the server features that support HIPAA, and the role-based access controls. Thank you. Oh, do we need questions now? Does anybody have questions that are not technical in nature? Yes? Can you I can't hear the... The room's big. It's okay. So it's interesting because David, who's the engineer, has very different interests and motivations from me. I want to be able to show that you can use text messaging, that I can implement it with fidelity and define the dose that the person's receiving, and to be able to link that with an outcome of behavior, right? So I want to show that SMS can change behavior. He, on the other hand, is more interested in creating a product for clients that can be scaled up. And so he's definitely more interested in creating something that can then be translated into more of a business model. And I'm kind of working with him to kind of support that aspiration. There are mechanisms, I think you mentioned, like through NIH, where you can begin to develop and create business plans to actually then implement this more broadly, I guess, and make it available to others.
Great presentation. Just to elaborate on it, there are several NIH grant mechanisms, as you already probably know. They're on these R codes, like R for Reagan, R03 for small grants, R21 for exploratory research grants, and small grants, $50,000, exploratory research grants, $250,000, and then for R4344, which are the SBIR STTRs, start off at $100,000 for 6 months, phase two, $1 million. If you're interested, my company secured several NIH, several SBIR grants before. We can actually walk you through. But on the technology, great technology, 3-tier architecture, you presented it well, PhD computer science, I was flawless. I would have not known you didn't understand the technology as well as you do. So